And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Hear that podcast growling, mean and angry.
Hear that co-host shouting, it's Danger and Jay.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of Hear That Podcast. Growlin', Paul Danier Jr., Jay Morrison of The Athletic. We are excited to talk to you today. You know why, Jay?
Oh, I know why.
You do?
I do.
What do you think?
The schedule release.
Oh. The schedule release. We have so much schedule content for you. You don't even understand. We're pulling out all the stops. We got lots of schedule talk to do. Other things, of course, we will get to first. But lots of schedule content coming your way on today's podcast. That includes Jay's Got Stats, Run, Pass, or Boot, Quiz Questions, Bengals Growler Bet. All the content for you in with the schedule as the topic. I mean, we're playing the hits today, baby. This is Skinner playing Freebird.
This is, I don't know why, I love the NFL schedule release. Of all the things on the sports calendar that I love, it's probably the most irrational, but I don't know what it is about it. I think it's the logistics of putting it together fascinate me, and trying to figure out where certain things will piece in as far as home opener, road opener, primetime games. I just love the guessing game. I love seeing it when it's released. I can't wait for Wednesday.
Do you love the release of the mock schedule?
I do.
I had a lot of fun with the mock schedule this year. I'm very excited to unveil it. The mock schedule, to give a teaser of my lead, I really started thinking about it. The mock schedule is something that nobody asked for and nobody really needs, but you're somehow interested in. I said it's sort of like that Mad About You reboot on Spectrum. Like it's awkward. You don't know why you're watching, but there you are. You're watching Paul Reiser and Helen Hunt. Like it doesn't make any sense why this exists, but you just find yourself weirdly drawn to it.
That's a great analogy.
You never watched Mad About You, did you?
I did. I loved Mad About You.
Did you watch the reboot?
I did not watch the reboot.
See, that's just it, you know? We don't need it. we have other things besides Mad About You to talk about. And that is, we have a little bit of news, I guess. We're going to talk a little bit through the off-season schedule that's going on. Rookie minicamp is happening. Mandatory mini camp. Also, we're going to talk through some of the logistics of that, which are interesting and dicey and all those things this year. We are going to take some questions. If you haven't read Jay's Q&A, mailbag is up. You can read that. But we had some extras that we're going to trot out here to talk a little bit about a few things that are on your mind. So we'll get to that. And then, of course, all our schedule content coming your way. If you are not a subscriber to The Athletic, cannot recommend it more. Justin Williams with another absolute bomb on the UC beat, talking to Jaron Cumberland. My mouth was open the entire time during that cue. I mean, it's just Jaron talking. It's just Jaron speaking about his experience with John Brannon and the behind the scenes of everything that went on there. And that was something. So I highly recommend going in and reading that. C. Trent's story on the Wade Miley no-hitter is an absolute must-read. It was so good. It took you so far behind the scenes and into the reality of what that meant for Wade Miley. It was one of those, man, baseball is cool moments. Really loved reading that. And really, of course, all across the NFL,
We have so much coverage there, Premier League, NBA, you name it, everything's hopping right now. So all of that under one umbrella. Go to anywhere on the site, or you know, maybe go to one of our stories. Jay's mailbag, my story from last week, behind the scenes of the Bengals draft path, is all up. You can go to there, subscribe at any of those deals going on now. A little bit to kind of touch on the, put a final bow on the draft and some of the behind the scenes stuff. I mean, that was, Jay, when I started transcribing, and thank you, by the way, for helping me transcribe all of those interviews, I had 12,000 words of transcription to go through with all the interviews I did for that thing. Oh, my goodness.
That's one of those things where you love collecting as much info as possible. But yes, it is a laborious task, but I loved it. I did the Christian Sarkisian transcript for you, and I just loved listening to him and hearing what he had to say. And the piece itself is fantastic. If you have not read it yet, it really gives you, like Paul said, the inside, everything that led up to the draft and the direction, why they went with the players they went with. And I think it's easy to see why they are so excited about this draft, because it hit them perfectly, and the guys they had targeted stuck around to where they thought they would be. Just it's a really great read, looking at what goes into the draft prep, not just draft night and making the picks.
Yeah, and there was, you know, I really enjoy talking to the scouts in general. People, hope everybody enjoyed the podcast with Mike Potts last week, director of college scouting. Those guys know this in and out. They know this team inside and out. They know its needs inside and out better than anybody does. And I'll even say maybe better than the coaches, because they see it through a more objective point of view sometimes than the coaches do. The coaches are in it. They have their guys they believe in, and they see it very clearly, what their vision is for development. You know, scouts have a good ability. It's what is part of their job to stand back and assess what's working and what's not, and the talent level and what that should look like and what projections really realistically look like. You know, coaches, I think, always feel like they're going to get more out of their guys than maybe they really should expect to. And, you know, just connecting the whole team that way, they're great. If you have not listened to the Potts podcast, I highly recommend going back and doing that. That's a real deep insight into really their off season as a whole. But I think the takeaways that I had, and some of the more interesting things, was really how much they really feel like they did on day three. I think when we look at day three, and the names that came off the board to them, I think they are not super familiar. We haven't been discussing them for months, and it's like, okay, there's just a name and a position, right? But to see some of the very clear objective and some of the very clear, very real upside, now all these guys won't pan out. In fact, a lot of them, most of them won't. But the really clear objective that they established in doing that, I think, stood out to me. That number one being that relentlessness trait that they found over and over again in these guys, and the recognition that was a problem. That's what they want their identity to be, and that's what they felt like they didn't have enough of. This just 11 Sam Hubbards, right?
Like, yes.
Relentlessness in practice and on Sundays, and just that's what people know, that they're just going to be going against those guys that give it to you every single snap. It may not always be the most high end. It may not always be the crazy traits and the speed off the edge and all those, the perfect things. And that's, you know what, some of them are. And some of them can be and have their own unique traits. But the one that they all have is that thing that is part of the identity of what they're really trying to build here. And I think that's telling. And I think that can be a big difference maker for them defensively, potentially.
Yeah, these all kind of run together. I can't remember who said it, but it was either one of the coaches or it was somebody that you talked to for your story, talked about watching a guy in a game where they were either way ahead or way out of it, and seeing him still go at it as if it was the first series of the game. And that's what you need. They are not going to have the best roster in the division this year, but you can have the best effort. And if you, the more of those guys, I mean, it's great to say you're going to give full effort all the time, but look, you're going to wear down. It's just the physical aspect. You get in the fourth quarter and you're up to 60, 70 snaps. You might think you're going as hard as you can, but it's not going to look the same as the first quarter. But the more of these guys you put together, the more you can give them breaks in a series off here and there. And they can still be those relentless, nonstop guys in the fourth quarter when games are on the line. And you're right. If you can get 11 of those guys on defense, it doesn't have to be the most talented defense. They can get into that middle of the pack, and that's all you're asking for from this defense right now with the way the offense is set up, is to just be average.
Yep. I mean, I think our new refrain is going to be, it really is, it's average on the line, average on defense, elite in the weapons. It's how the good teams are built. It's how the great teams are built. It's how teams are winning. And the teams that are around at the end, it's what they look like. And that's what you hope you have with Joe Burrow and this group of receivers and running back. And that combo can be enough. And I think that's kind of where we're going to be looking at what this team, the path to success in 2021 in particular, looks like. You know, I don't think anybody can look at their defense and be like, man, they are going to dominate. Right. Like, I mean, they can be very good. They might be able to mesh it all and put together. There's a lot of different pieces. It's super unknown. No one's going to look at that offensive line and say, man, they're going to dominate. But you can look at their weapons and say they're going to dominate. And that's what it's all about. It's about everybody else not being a deficient. It's really like a team-wide no donkeys approach. Right. Like, we have taken no donkeys on the line. And applied it. It's a team-wide no donkeys with to go with these elite weapons. Let Burrow and the receivers carry everyone and nobody else be the anvil on the back, like in those cartoons, right? Don't make me have to carry that. Okay. Can you just walk normal? You know, it's like everybody, it's like, you know what? Here's a better analogy for you. It's something that I deal with. Take your family to the zoo, right? And you got the one kid that just will not stay with you, will not walk in the pack, and it slows everybody down. I'm not asking you to run fast or be at the front of the line, okay? Two-year-old, three-year-old. I just need you to not get quickly distracted and run towards the monkeys when we're going to the giraffe, okay? Because you're slowing us all down. You're ruining it for everybody, okay? Just let us lead the way. You just try to follow close enough that you don't hold us back and get us distracted. How's that? Is that good? I'm like 1 for 3 in analogies today.
Well, that's a great one. Where are you though in terms of buying the kid leash? Because that solves that problem, but it's also a bad look.
I'm not a kid leash. I'm not going to put my kid on the leash. Look, I mean, I can't. No, that's just, it's too far. I understand why people do it. Look, Harambe. Right. Like I get it. Right. I no one wants a Harambe situation here. OK, my kid got out of control and a gorilla died. All right. Nobody wants that. But I can't put my kid on the leash. And they're good enough. They're good enough. I have no donkeys right now. I'm happy to say that. But everybody knows that one bad day, you know exactly what it feels like when you've got a donkey in your pack at the zoo.
Well, sometimes if you let them run off a little bit where maybe you can still kind of see them, I know this is a dicey proposition in today's world, but if they get a little bit lost, it will freak them out and they will not run off again.
Yeah, well, maybe that's just like one bad loss to the Ravens in week 4. Like that's what that is, you know, and it gets everybody back scared straight. Okay. We took that far enough. So that, I think that's kind of major. Did you have any other draft takeaways now that we kind of had some time to let it sit in? Maybe things that you initially overreacted to or feel differently about now, or something that stands out a little bit more than it did in the initial fallout from everything?
No, the more I think about it, though, I mean, if you take, because you figure there's going to be an injury situation. And I had this in my mailbag. One of the questions was how many of the draft picks make the roster. You could see all of them potentially making it. Like I thought Wyatt Hubert might have been a developmental practice squad type guy until I read your behind the scenes piece. And then now I'm all on board. And same with Trey Smith or Trey Hill. It's like, you can see a path for all these guys. And I don't know. That might be a Jay's Got Stats. They've had it before in 7-player drafts where everybody made the initial 53, but with this many guys, I don't know if that's ever happened. And it just, again, there can be an injury in camp that's going to put a guy on IR for the first few weeks or whatever. But I think this draft class as a whole has a chance to all still be here, whether it's practice squad or 53. And I think there's an outside shot they could all be on the 53.
Jay's Got Stats needs to happen on that. Most draft picks to make the 53 ever for the Bengals. Or maybe last. I won't make you go ever. What, last 10 years maybe?
Yeah, I've got a database of the positional breakdown of the last 10 final cuts. So that wouldn't be too hard to find.
All right. Well, homework has been assessed to you. This happens too much. You talk yourself into these things, Jay, too often. You walk yourself into work. You gotta say avoid that.
It's that time of year. I mean, anything that we can find that we can turn into content, I'm all for.
Yeah, it's find work season. There's no doubt. a little bit of news to pop through here. D.D. Westbrook, a receiver returner from Jacksonville, was with Jacksonville, free agent now, still on the market. And Bengals, I think Josina Anderson had the Bengals being in contact with him, along with the Vikings, and then the Chiefs being pretty aggressive in pursuit of him. Makes sense. This is the Alex Erickson spot. There was one thing that we heard them talk about after the draft they didn't really get, which was returner. I think they want a punt returner. Obviously, they have Brandon Wilson at kick returner. Darius Phillips can do it, but again, I don't know. I feel like they're trying to trade Darius Phillips at all times. Like, it just seems it's constant. Well, he could be the punt returner. I don't know. We need a punt returner. Well, he could be the fourth corner. I don't know. Maybe we should sign Eli Apple. Like, it's just very weird. So they seem to be wanting a punt returner. The Alex Erickson spot is still there. They didn't really find that. They had targets. The draft didn't fall to them that way late. So Westbrook, a guy who's had a lot of success as a punt returner in the league, has some speed, plays in the slot. Tyler Boyd backup, return punts. Think of it that way. Bengals kicking the tires there, seeing if they can add him to their room. Would certainly be a nice add. And that's when you're considering that level of depth and you're talking about your sixth receiver at that point, fifth, sixth receiver and your Boyd backup. So we'll see what happens with that. I mean, if the Chiefs start aggressively pursuing you and you're a receiver in this league, you're going to like that fit depending on what the money looks like. So we'll see how involved the Bengals stay on that, but kicking the tires there. The offseason schedule's kind of kicking off. We have rookie mini camp, which is essentially like they come in for a few hours and wear hello, my name is, name tags, and shake hands or maybe fist bump. And that's kind of that for a day. It's very low key. It's very small. It's more of a get to know you than anything. But that will be happening this weekend. Get them in here and just kind of run through some things a little bit. All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
It's kind of a weird spot, Jay. This is a sort of a national question, but the NFLPA has kind of advised these teams and everybody in the league to not participate in the offseason program for anything that's not mandatory, because they don't, I think it's the direction they want the league to go in. They don't want there to be an offseason program. They don't think you should be in there doing stuff. And they felt like last year proved that, and you can do things virtual. And that's kind of what the PA is pushing. These rookies find themselves in a weird spot because they're asking this of the rookies too, to not show up to things. And you get drafted. It's like the proudest moment of your life, and you say on draft day, I'm going to prove this team right, that they made the right decision, and I will never let them down. And it's like it's your first job. You know, you show up on your first day of your first real job. You know, the pride. Like, you're there like 30 minutes early, standing at the door, right? Like, I'm ready to go. And then the PA, this union, which you probably don't even understand unions hardly. I mean, I know I really didn't when I was 20, whatever. And you're like, no, don't show up at that job. It's a really weird spot for all these rookies. And, you know, they're all going to be here as far as I can tell. And the team, when the team starts doing things, is going to be here, at least a lot of them are, as far as we can tell, because the Bengals did not issue a statement like a lot of other teams did. So I feel for these rookies kind of being thrown in the middle of a labor battle.
Yeah, well, it's like they have to basically pick where their allegiance is. And right now, they don't know. I mean, they know the players from watching them on TV, but they know the coaching staff and the scouts better. And maybe their loyalty is more toward them than they know the NFLPA is a powerful union. But I don't know. That is a really tough call because they're not on strike, but it still kind of feels like crossing a picket line if they ask you not to do something and you do it. I don't know. I would not want to be in that position. And I think it would be uncomfortable to do that, to show up. I wonder what the long-term ramifications would be if the veterans in the locker room would hold a grudge for long if a rookie did show up, because you hear this all the time when guys hold out. I mean, if a guy's holding out, he's hurting the team. He's not there when he should be, whether it's voluntary or training camp when it's mandatory. But players always say you stay out of another man's business. This is something that he has to decide for himself. And so you wonder if maybe they will lean on them to not show up, but if they do show up, I don't think it's like they're going to be outcast in their own locker room to start their careers.
It's easy for veterans with $20 million in the bank to tell undrafted free agent guy not to show up to voluntary thing, right? Like, yeah, easy for you guys to say. Everybody that's part of that committee, all the NFL leaders, these are people with money. These are people that have earned their skins, by the way, probably by showing up to stuff.
Voluntary.
And now trying to ask guy trying to grind out something that can set his family up. I have a problem with that. And then the other part about this is it just backfired on him. The Jonah James injury just cost this dude 10 mil. Because when you're working out, when you're showing up to the things at the facility, you have insurance. You have liability. It's protection for your money. This cost this dude $10 million by telling him not to show up. If you're going to work out where you're covered in case you get hurt. Something happens to you. And that's not even getting into the fact of young guys who are trying to prove themselves. I mean, And these practices are not anything. These off-season things, it's shorts and t-shirts, and you're doing the same crap you would do if you were working out at a park or some high school throwing with somebody. When they show, look, it's Matt Ryan and Calvin Ridley throwing in California at a high school. That's the same crap they would be doing if they did it at Flowery Branch in Atlanta or at Paul Brown Stadium in Cincinnati. Like, it's the same thing. That's all these things are. But as far as we know, the offseason program is going to happen. It's still virtual, but the 24th, they can start showing up and do practices. And as far as we know, they're going to open them up to us once a week and then have the mandatory mini camp June 15th through the 17th, which is 3 days of I wouldn't call it. It's not camp practice. It's like camp practice light has been typically.
Yeah. The Broncos are at the center of this storm right now with the Juwan James thing. But you just go back 1 year and it was the Bengals were there and it wasn't the same. But it was Trey Waynes not working out off site before he signed his contract because he didn't want to get hurt until he had the contract signed. And then that put him a little bit behind. As soon as he signs the contract, he starts lifting and tears his pec. And that was in the facility, right? That wasn't the Bengals just being, so they had to pay him. Been outside.
Imagine if he would have done that outside.
Yeah.
That's what he was worried about.
Right. And
I don't know. It's a really complicated spot.
It is. And it feels like, the Broncos could, it's not a rule. They can still pay Juwan James if they want to, but it just feels like it's almost the CBA has already been agreed to, but it still feels like they're still negotiating it because they're still fighting for stuff. The pandemic changed everything. It created all these new rules and exceptions. And I think the players really liked the virtual offseason last year. They don't want to show up to work any more than they have to. And this is the owners fighting back. And saying, if you guys aren't going to be here, you're putting yourself in serious financial jeopardy.
Well, from the word you don't hear publicly from the Bengals and that you hear when you talk to people here locally, they have a lot of guys that want to be here.
Yeah.
And want to be working together and at the very least kind of starting to build something around here. So from a Bengals perspective, from a team perspective, I think that's a good thing. And we'll see how many of them show up. That'll be an interesting attendance count the first day they let us into the OTA to see how many we even need to count, how many are actually there. So we'll be on top of that for you. That's coming up in 2 weeks, week and a half, 2 weeks.
Yeah, 2 weeks. Yeah. The thing is, I didn't keep exact count of this, but I want to say it was maybe 2/3 of the league, of the teams in the league, issued a joint statement saying we will not show up. And the Bengals were not one of those teams that came.
Some of them had different wording. Some of them said like most of us or a lot of us. Like there was something, but there is nothing has come from Cincinnati. Mo has a story up now, also on the site. About the Bizarro Bengals, which is basically, as far as I'm concerned, that headline is basically just our editor, Dave, trying to get more Seinfeld into the site, I'm pretty sure, but that's fine. Even though it's Seinfeld and Superman, I get it. But Bizarro Bengals with the Los Angeles Chargers. And it's a really interesting thought, and it's well spelled out, as it often is with Mo, and it's about, look, two teams with a young quarterback that they drafted who played in front of a bad offensive line. And the one is pretty aggressive in pursuing the offensive line. They set the market on Corey Linsley. They go get Matt Filer, a name that we talked about a lot in free agent period that would be an upgrade for you as a guard tackle type. They use their top pick on one of the top two offensive tackles in Rashawn Slater. All the things that I think a lot of fans wanted to see the Bengals do to truly protect their top young quarterback. They had two really good receivers in Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, but they didn't really go get a good third receiver. And it's the opposite approach. It's the other path. And it's going to be interesting to watch those play out and see how it works. If it's any better, if it's, you know, it's kind of what Bengals fans asked for. I enjoyed the piece. I have one other comment on it. Well, one, they also fired their embattled head coach, and Anthony Lynn, and obviously bizarro Bengals sticking with continuity and Zach Taylor. And that's all fine. We've visited that long ago and we won't go back into that right now. There's another team that I think is bizarro Bengals in a different way. The Detroit Lions. Not only did they actually pick Penei Sewell, they have loaded up on their offensive line. They just made Frank Ragnow the highest paid center. They signed Taylor Decker. And they have every position on their line is a heavy investment, whether through a draft pick like Sewell or whether through a high paid free agent or whether through extensions. It is a big, powerful, put all your assets into the offensive line situation. Their receivers, nobody's.
Let them go.
You don't know them. And they got Jared Goff, who's sort of like, is he Joe Burrow? I don't know. Number one overall pick. I don't know. We new place, new system, but they got the line, right? And they got the protection for the quarterback. But do they have the receivers that can even get open for it? That might be the more bizarro Bengals to watch. That might be the really interesting case study in seeing which offense is more effective. The one that has all kinds of investment in the line, but not enough at receiver, versus the one that has all kinds of investment at receiver and just shooting for average as well, sort of on the offensive line. Chargers, Lions, both on the schedule this year, will be fun to watch this season as bizarro Bengals.
Yeah, because, I mean, the Lions had a shot, too, to take a wide receiver. They needed a wide receiver. They let Kenny Golladay and Marvin Jones walk in free agency, and they had a shot to take Waddle or Devontae Smith, and they went Penei Sewell. So, yeah, that is a really good comparison, and I think that's great. It's not just going to be a virtual comparison. We are going to see them. It's just a matter of you hope it's later in the year so you can kind of see how the paths play out. And I think it will be. We'll get to this later with our mock schedule, but I do think that both those games are going to be later in the year.
Yep. Let's run through four questions. Let's go through the we've got some from your mailbag. We'll try to hit these real quick, and then we'll get into some schedule stuff. Jay, you've got some leftover questions. Let's hit me up with the first one. Let's roll.
Okay, Jerry P. wants to know if signing Sam Hubbard is a definite priority for this team, or if the drafting of all the rookies and signing Trey Hendrickson opens the possibility of the Bengals not re-signing Sam Hubbard.
It is a definite priority. It is. Yes. I mean, look, they have money left over, too, to even front load it. I mean, people will ask a lot about what are they going to do with that money. You know, people back in the days of everyone's a capologist and everyone understands how it works. I like to look at what the Bengals do because that's what all I care about in terms of explaining things. They give a decent amount of money up front in the first year. And a lot of these teams do almost no money in the very first year and then backload. No, the Bengals like to give a lot early and that keeps their guarantees low. It's part of how they do things. They have money set up to do this for both Hubbard and Bates and still have plenty more room. But I would expect them to be aggressive in that fashion with both of those guys in the fall, and I expect them both to get done. Look, we just talked about the relentlessness trait. You want a veteran who is the example of that, and it's number 94. Sam Hubbard is the example you want to set. When Joseph Osai and Cam Sample and Wyatt Hubert walk in the room and they show up in the fall, and what's one of the first news items they learn about on their new team? The dude that plays like that just got 12 mil per year. I want to be like that. And that's how I like to play. This is my kind of place. I'm going to do that for 4 years and I'm going to get my bag, right? That's how it perpetuates itself. So, yeah, that is a number one priority, and I fully expect them to get it done. I mean, it's everything about Sam Hubbard is like Mr. Bengal now.
Yes.
He's at the dinner. He's at the dinner. He's Burrow's best friend. He's like your leader on defense. He's Captain America. He's from Cincinnati. He plays hard. It's like, I don't know what else. Like, this dude is everything they love, and they are going to reward it, and they're going to do it soon.
Yeah. The only question is who goes first? And it's not an either or. It feels like it's going to happen where it's going to be both of them. It's just who do they sign first? And maybe it's one of those situations where it just comes together like the Geno and Carlos one, and they sign them on the same day and have a dual press conference. You could see that happening as well. But yeah, he is definitely in their plans. Since Zach Taylor got here, that coaching staff has pointed to Sam Hubbard as an example of what they want the rest of the team to be. And it feels like a lock that he's going to get a long-term deal at some point in probably July or August.
Agreed. The only piece on the Bates thing aspect of this is, you know, that safety number is very easily digestible as a franchise tag, which we saw teams utilize this year. So if you do have some sort of breakdown where they don't want to pay $16 million per to Jesse Bates just yet, let him play out the last year knowing that you'll franchise tag him at, I believe it's 11. Maybe they do that. I don't see them doing that to Jesse, but they could. And so we'll, you know, you never know. Negotiations around these parts have tended to be weird, but I feel like this is a perfect opportunity for you to pay the guys that you believe in and draft, develop, and retain, right? Like, if that's your motto, if that's who you are, I don't know what else you're a hypocrite then if you don't do it to both of these guys right now when you have the money, you drafted them, you've developed them, they're top class in the league. Boom, there you go.
I mean, the other thing is they can do both. They can tag him and extend him because what is the
– well, I just mean doing it now rather than tagging him in the spring.
Right, but you could tag him just so you can kind of kick the can down the road on the negotiation. And then once you tag a guy, you can still come to terms on a long-term extension after the tag. I think there's like a two-month gap
Yeah, but that would be next year. I mean, if you want to go early on, do it in the fall, you know, and not make a guy play
on the final
on as a lame duck in the final year of his contract that you love. Like it's kind of in making the investment and getting, you know, is it a good time to get in on Jesse Bates? Maybe not. You coming off the best year ever for him and arguably the best safety in the league, but a discussion that we'll have down the line. I still fully anticipate those getting done. What do you got next, Jay?
Okay, Mark S. had two questions, and I thought they were both really good. One, what are the odds that Geno returns? And his second one was, what is the weakest position group going into camp?
I think the odds that Geno returns is 12.5%.
I was going to say 15. Yeah, it's it's not out of the question, but it just it just feels like with the purging of the Marvin Lewis veterans that it's not that there was a conflict there with Geno, but it feels like a fresh start. And I mean, if nobody else is signing him and he's sitting out there and he's super cheap and he can be a three technique with Ogunjobi, maybe it happens. But I don't think that is the initial path they're looking to take.
Yeah, and then the second part, weakest position group, I think linebacker still.
Yeah.
That's just so unproven. Like, you're just still betting on hope, and I don't know how much hope there is for Jermaine Pratt. I mean, we're entering year three, and he's played a lot. And we haven't seen him be a real guy, and you're going to ask him to be a real guy this year. And Logan Wilson showed well, but is he going to take the next step? You know, ADG didn't really get fully – I mean, they scaled him back. He wasn't ready. So, you know, what do you – I mean, Marcus Bailey, what – you know, I still think that's hanging out there as a big concern. You have Jordan Evans. I mean, there's nothing there to be sure about. The closest thing you're sure about is Logan Wilson, and he's just a second-year guy still trying to figure it out. So I don't, I still think linebacker hangs out there, but you know, there's a lot to like, there's a lot of upside, but it's still very unknown.
Yeah. And it was another reason that they had to fix a defensive line that is going to help the linebacker group having a more effective D line. And, you know, we talked about Geno return. I think a Josh Bynes return is a lot more likely just because of the situation they're in at linebacker. And he seemed open to it last year. The Bengals loved everything about him as a leader and just that veteran presence, a guy with a ring. So I could, because it feels like they have to add some pieces somewhere, whether it's some veterans that are still hanging out there that haven't been signed or some undrafted free agents that they haven't signed yet. But they are not only not really talented yet at the position, but they're not deep at all. It's the worst of both situations. And I, if you had to power rank Mark's question, the weakest position group, I mean, it's linebacker, and then it's scratching your head, what would be the next weakest? I mean,
well, offensive linebacker, line, I think.
Yeah, but I mean, linebacker just feels clear and above that is the position group that is the answer to this question.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'd agree to that. What do we got next?
Okay, Thomas N., who may or not be our editor, Thomas David Nenemitz, wants to know, do the Bengals consider Fred Johnson and Hakeem Adeniji contributors or donkeys?
Oh, man. I don't know. I think it's a big preseason for both of these guys. I think as a third, fourth tackle, I mean, let's play out Jonah Williams gets hurt. What happens next, right? Does Jackson Carmen go out to left tackle and Suofilo, Spain, Michael Jordan, one of those three are in the mix now at guard as your players there? Does Carmen stay and Fred Johnson or Hakeem Adeniji take over at left tackle? We're in the same scenario playing out on the right side if that were to happen. The question is, I don't know. And I don't know that anybody knows the answer to it. I think that is a preseason thing that you're going to learn. They need to learn. Where are Fred Johnson and Hakeem Adeniji, right? Where are they in terms of their development, in terms of their want to? And if either of those guys is somebody you feel comfortable to put in as the swing tackle and not have to worry about working Jackson Carmen at both positions early in the year as a rookie when he's already got a lot on his plate to be prepared as a swing tackle. I think it's a preseason question.
Yeah. I mean, a lot would, I guess, depend on when, if we're talking the hypothetical here of Jonah getting hurt, like when that happens. I think would factor into the decision, because if it's early, maybe you stick with the plan of keeping Jackson Carmen at guard. But if it's later and he's proved to be a really good player, maybe you feel more comfortable kicking him out to tackle. But I think Adeniji has the higher upside at this point, just because, I mean, I know Jim Turner loved the guy and the Bengals draft him, so the entire brain trust liked him. But Fred Johnson, I mean, the Steelers don't miss on offensive linemen very often, and they let this guy go. They cut him. And, you know, maybe the Bengals are waiting for the light to go on. It doesn't seem like it has yet. This is a huge year for him. This is make it or break it year. You can see Adeniji with only 1 year in, having 3 years left on that rookie deal. He's got a little more time to play with here, and he did look good at times. It is interesting they list him as a guard now instead of a tackle on the Bengals roster. But the point is, you don't want either one of those guys playing left tackle. But if they had to, maybe they do. If they get to see Jackson Carmen play a bit, they kick him out and go with one of these guys, or you, like you said, Billy Price or Suofilo, somebody else. Michael Jordan, put somebody else at guard. I guess the thing, the big thing here is just don't get Jonah Williams hurt, because this is as much as they attention they pay to the offensive line, they're still not very deep there.
They've won some games with Fred Johnson at tackles. Our good friend Richard Skinner will tell you they're 4-1 with Fred Johnson as a starter. You know, I think he could be serviceable in a pinch. You don't want him there all year at tackle. Yet. They obviously made a mistake playing him at guard. You don't want him out there every week. But as a swing, I think he's in play, and he's potentially not a donkey. You know. But yeah, I mean, it's the most concerning depth spot on the roster is what that backup tackle actually looks like. Because you guys have four guards now that I think that you'd be comfortable with, you know, and you've got two, you know, you've got Price and Hopkins at center, but the backup there at tackle, you've seen them, you know, that's kind of the one spots where you're really hoping Riley Reiff and Jonah Williams can just get through this year and play all 16. All right, let's just take a quick break.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
It's schedule time. Who's excited? It's time.
Yes, I am.
All right. The mock schedule has come out today. So I have that up with my ideal schedule. Basically, there was a few components to this, and we'll breeze through it. I think that the things the Bengals should be thinking about this, and that is, one, how about you get not the most potent pass rushes going against Joe Burrow's knee the first couple weeks? Like, that's just, if there's teams on your schedule that are probably not going to be great pass rushing teams, or are rebuilding there, or just have kind of don't have Khalil Mack, you'd like to see them early, why Burrow gets his comfort back in the pocket and, you know, comes back from the injury. So that's a part of it. You always want to face teams with new coaches or new quarterbacks early in the season. That's going to be a component here. And I think, you know, you're also talking about maybe some weather things. You've got some teams that you don't want to go see. Like Denver in December, like they thrive off those snow games, and it's just kind of miserable. And you got a team that throws it a lot now. I don't know if you want to be a part of something like that. Certain teams that, you know, the Chargers, probably would they want to come to Cincinnati in December? No, probably not. There's certain things there that kind of went into it. So it had me having them open with the Jaguars, who have a new coach, a new quarterback, and no pass rush. It's the trifecta of the opener that you want. And they're not going to be super good. This team needs to win early. So put the easy games. I always say put the easy games on paper at the front of the schedule, because the tough games end up not being so tough later in the year, typically, because injuries change things to a major dynamic. So that's why I have Jags first. And I have at the Raiders second, because their pass rush is so bad. And they are really trying. They signed in Yannick Ngakoue, but outside of that, you know, they're really trying to rebuild that thing, and I'm having that take some precedence. Those are my first two in the ideal start for the Bengals.
That's for the Bengals. If we're talking ideal for us,
no,
you'd like to see the Raiders be week 16, 17, or 18 so we can take our Christmas money to Vegas.
Ah, ideal. Let's jump into this aspect of it for Bengals fans. Ideal trip. Okay. Best timing. Here's your roadies this year. Vegas, Denver, Chicago, New York, after the Jets, Detroit, Baltimore, Cleveland, Pittsburgh. So I have my ranking of the best trips. Now, these can change depending on timing big time. Do you have your ranking of the best trips?
I do. I don't have them broken down by timing, but I've got
no,
I've
no.
Got,
I'm saying
I've
they would
them.
Change afterwards. But I'm just general without knowing the times. Do you have Vegas 1?
I do.
What do you have 2?
Denver.
Denver. Me too. 3.
Chicago.
Me too. 4.
New York.
No, I have Baltimore 4 over New York. Here's why.
Okay.
For us,
Pickles.
We stay in Jersey. The game's in Jersey. I like to stay near the stadium because I'm not going to stay in New York and then have to drive out to Jersey when there's an airport right next to the stadium in Jersey. So for us, I always feel like I never really get to experience New York. So I push it down a little bit. But for a trip, you can go in and stay in New York and get to enjoy the city. And that's I do for others, maybe it's higher up on the list. But for me, when we go, I just stay out in Jersey, which is kind of sad.
Yeah. So I had Baltimore right after New York.
Yes.
So
then Detroit.
Yes. I like Detroit.
I like Detroit Stadium a lot, actually.
Yeah.
I love Ford Field.
I do too.
Ford Field is a great place to see a game. It's super exciting. It's a fun atmosphere. I enjoy Ford Field in general. Now the game will be kind of mad, but hey, they might win. Detroit has one of the lowest Vegas over-unders this year. So if you're looking for one that maybe they would win, it's an easy drive. It's a great place to see a game. Detroit is a pretty fun place. That's one that you want that in September.
Yeah,
for
sure.
If you're going to go and you want to go to Detroit and you want to do a drive, I highly recommend doing that only if it's in September.
And get your passport too, because you're going to want to hop over to Ontario.
So these are all good trips. Here's the thing about Vegas to watch when the schedule comes out. Can I run through the average highs in Vegas depending by month? In September, the average high is 96. And by the way, in August, it's 104, in case you're wondering. So, I mean, that you can get some 100 days for sure. 96. In October, it's 83. In November, it's 70. The swings in Vegas are just ridiculous, which is kind of really should be their motto as a city. But I don't know that you want Vegas in September. Like, I don't know that you want to go. And you can go anytime you go, you can stay in the casinos and it's great and it's Vegas. But October, November is a little bit more probably what you want. The only problem is you get down to November, it's 35 at night in Vegas. You get some cold nights. I think you want October 8th.
Yeah, mid-October.
Yeah, mid-October in Vegas is a great time to go, to keep an eye on when to go. If it's in October, highly recommend. Plus, great sports month in October.
Yes.
You've got baseball playoffs going on. Is NBA start late October? You've got a lot of good stuff. College football is in mid-swing. You just got a lot of good stuff happening in October. So a good Saturday to hang out and gamble on sports all day. Weather's nice. Bengals on Sunday. Highly recommend.
Save some money for the stadium on Sunday, though.
Yeah, if you can. The other one, Denver being second for me, I think I cannot recommend Denver to travel to anymore. I mean, it is a fantastic city. It's so much fun. There's great food. There's tons of stuff to do. It's beautiful up there. You can do a day trip down to Colorado Springs if you want to, which is awesome. Garden of the Gods, Pikes Peak down there. But Denver as a whole is super awesome. I highly recommend Denver, but you need that early. You don't want to be going to Denver anytime after Thanksgiving. Like, you just don't want that. If you could get Denver, if an early Denver to me, let's say they had Denver and Vegas week 2 and 3, Denver is a better trip than Vegas there.
Yeah, I would agree.
Because it's just too hot. It's just going to be too hot for Vegas for me, whereas Denver is going to be perfect, and it's going to be awesome. So I would highly recommend that. Let's go. Let's talk a little bit about most likely to be in primetime. Games on the schedule most likely to be in primetime. Now, reminder, I think you have a better chance of primetime games being a home game because of the home schedule. I mean, the Bengals' home schedule is full of big-time teams, okay? You're talking Green Bay, although who knows what's going on with Aaron Rodgers. Kansas City, Mahomes, always a chance Mahomes could land on primetime. Chargers, I think there's going to be a lot of allure for Justin Herbert versus Joe Burrow. Mm-hmm. Vikings, they're probably not going to be a primetime game. Steelers, always a chance of primetime. Jags, there's a chance that they love the idea of Trevor Lawrence versus Joe Burrow. 49ers, always a chance. They're always interesting. They're a very good team. I don't know that any of those happen. Then we mentioned all the roadies. Do you have your most likely prime times? What do you think?
I number one is Jacksonville. I just think the Trevor Lawrence versus Joe Burrow plus Urban Meyer coming back to Ohio, plus we can throw that game with two teams that don't have a lot of national appeal on a Thursday night. It's easy travel for Jacksonville. It just feels like a Thursday night. I think maybe week four, week five, they may wait to put the Bengals in primetime until October just to give them some more time in case Joe Burrow's not ready. But Jacksonville to me feels like the most likely game to be in primetime. And then I had Chicago just because of the travel aspect, Chicago and Cleveland. The Bengals in the last 25 primetime games, 8 have been against the Steelers. 3 against the Browns and 1 against the Ravens. For whatever reason, they now for a while they're back beyond the last 25 games. They did put Bengals and Ravens in primetime quite a bit, but they've really have gotten away from that. I don't know that Pittsburgh Bengals has the allure that it has over the last decade. You know, even last year it was a primetime game. I just don't see that happening this year. The Jacksonville, Chicago, Cleveland are my top three. And then I think we see the Chargers or the Chiefs being a Sunday night game that could be flexed. And they can flex Monday night games now this year too. I could see that with the Mahomes versus Burrow, the Justin Herbert versus Burrow, that being a game later in the year that they can flex out of it if things go really south for the Bengals.
There's just not many that I see going in primetime. I just don't, you know, I just don't see as many. I think I'm with you. Jags Bengals screams Thursday night football. Jags Bengals September, late September. Yeah, that feels week 3, week 4, week 5. Jags Bengals screams Thursday night football. Absolutely. I'm with you. Trevor Lawrence, Joe Burrow, Urban Meyer, all that stuff, bad teams, Thursday night, boom. Like, just feels right. Chargers, Bengals, I think as well for the Herbert Burrow factor. I don't know that you're getting that thing on Sunday night. I don't know that you're – I mean, to me, can they do – maybe they do two Thursdays? I don't – I would be surprised. I think if they get a Sunday or Monday night game, it's in division. Bengals Browns in primetime last year did really good. I see it all the time on NFL Network, runs it all the time now as a replay. But it was both those games were really exciting. It's young quarterbacks in this division. I think people are maybe tired of Pittsburgh or a little worn out on Pittsburgh. I don't know that Pittsburgh's going to get the same. Like you said, the allure, the draw. To me, Browns and Ravens have never really been somebody that TV really responds to. Like they don't die to have Ravens. People are dying to have Browns games. I think people would love to have a Burrow game. And when you look at what the Bengals Browns games looked like last year, and what was one of their, you know, Browns Ravens was one of their most successful games, one of their most entertaining games last year. This division is highly entertaining. I'd be really curious to see if Bengals Brown sneaks into a Sunday or a Monday. I think that's probably my. I don't see anything else here. And maybe I'm wrong, and I'd be surprised. I don't see anything else here that sneaks in.
I could see them kind of hoping that the Bengals take off with Burrow and Chase and giving them a later in the season primetime game against one of those better teams, a Sunday game where they could just flex out of it if need be. There's always going to be a better game that they can get into. The Bengals rarely, they've been flexed into Sunday night a few times. I don't remember them being flexed out. One other thing to keep in mind when you're talking schedule, that the Reds always come into play here because of the fact that they only once have they both played at home on the same day, and that's because it was a Reds playoff game. There's no way around it. But if they can get around it, they get around it. Reds are out of town week one. It's a really good chance for the Bengals to open at home. If it's a Sunday game, the Bengals are going to be on the road in week two and week three because the Reds are home both those Sundays. But there's the opportunity, and this is where Bengals-Jags could come in, that Thursday night of week two, the Reds are not home yet. That could be a home game. And then week three would have to be a Monday night for the Bengals to be at home. That's not, they're not going to put the Bengals on Monday night early in the year. So it almost feels certain it's going to be a home road opening to the season for the Bengals.
They should really rename that week two Thursday game after the Bengals. Can they name it the Who Day Special? Like, I mean, and they've always ended up in that like awful first Thursday where they play twice and four. It's actually a great spot for the team.
Yeah.
Because you have the whole offseason to be well rested and you go boom, boom, and you get it out of the way early and don't have to worry about it. So it's not terrible. But they always seem to end up there. So I would not be stunned to see that happen again. All right. Jay's got stats time. Can you tell me the number of primetime games there have been each of the last 10 seasons?
Yes. Last year, there were two. In 2019, there was one. In 18 and 17, there was two. In 16, 15, and 14, there was four. And in 2013 and 2012, there were three. And in 2011, zero.
Okay. So usually two. For a team that's not great, a Bengals team that's not great. They're entertaining now, but I still don't see TV responding to them. So let's go with run, pass, or boot on this. Number of primetime games. One, two, three or more. That includes the Thursday night game that pretty much everybody gets. So primetime games, one, two, or three or more.
You do have the extra game this year, but I don't think that's going to matter. I'm going to run with two. I will pass on one, and I'll boot three or more.
They were adding in the like Saturday stuff. I mean, they have added, but still, you know, you're running with
two, pass on zero or one. Well, one and booting three or more. Now, this is the original schedule, right? This doesn't count games flexed.
Non-flex, yeah. Yes. Just okay. What will happen Wednesday night.
Yep.
I'm tempted to run with one, but I think it replicates. I mean, last year, I think they gifted them that Pittsburgh game because they thought Burrow. I think Burroughs has draw enough to sneak them into one. Other one. Maybe I still think it's Bengals-Browns. So I'm gonna go ahead and do the same. I'm going to run with two, and I'm going to pass on one, and I'm going to boot three or more. I would be surprised if they shove Burrow into three primetime games. That would be surprising. But it's possible, but I would be surprised by that.
The ultimate – now, whether it's primetime or not, the ultimate game on the schedule for us and I think for fans would be week three in Chicago. And I think we talked about this before. Ohio mm-hmm. University plays at Northwestern on that Saturday of week three. And then you could have Bengals Bears on Sunday. And then you take day off to see the city. And then Tuesday and Wednesday, Reds at White Sox to end the regular season. That could be a fun trip for Cincinnati fans and for OU sports writers.
It's about us. Another fun one trip-wise would be Chicago on October 3rd because on October 2nd, UC at Notre Dame.
No.
is that Saturday at 2:30. So you go up, you do South Bend, then the game ends, you get up to Chicago, you have that, and then you can double up a nice 1-2 combo if it's that weekend as well for UC fans, which really any fan of college football, that is going to be a fantastic game. UC at Notre Dame, a fun game, big one for the Bearcats. If it ends up that way, also a good time to have Chicago on the schedule. Jay, you've got a schedule quiz. Are you going to try to quiz me?
Yeah, I'll give you two. The quiz just posted, actually. It's up. But if you guys want to wait to take it, we'll do two questions right here, and you'll know you'll have a little bit of a cheat sheet, so you'll know the answer before you take it. The quiz is 26 questions. It has to do with schedule history for the Bengals. First one for you, Paul. With 9 home games on the schedule for the first time in franchise history, the Bengals have a chance to break the team's single-season record of 275 points scored at home, which was set in which year? 1985, 1988, 2005, 2013, 2015.
I'm going to say 2015.
I think everybody's going to pick that. It was 2013.
13.
Kind of surprising. Yes, that was a division championship team.
They had a lot of defensive
team.
Points that year.
Yeah.
That was
a division championship team, too. I think everybody was either going to pick 88 or 2015.
They dropped the 49 spot on the Jets. I had like a 48 spot against the Vikings. They were blowing people out at home that year, at least.
Yeah.
And then they scored 10 against the Chargers.
I think that was one of the harder ones on there. So now if you're listening, you've got a free answer to a hard question. The next one, what is the Bengals' all-time winning percentage the week after their bye? Is it 571, 500, 425, 333, or 219?
Bengals fans feel like it's 219. I know this because we hear it all the time. I will say 333.
It's 219. They are 7-25 the week after a bye. That's like we talk about Pittsburgh and primetime and playoffs. You can throw the week in the bye after there as well. I don't know what the deal is that you're.
Jay's got stats that I need. What is their record the game before the bye?
Oh, I don't know. I don't have
because
that.
I feel like there's way more chance to play well. There's a higher chance to play well when you know you're about to take a break. Like, it's just, look, soon, if I can just go get this W, I can enjoy my week off. Like, I'm going to go extra hard because I got this time off coming. Rather, coming off time off, you're sluggish, like waking up in the morning. That's what I need. I need more homework for Jay.
Yeah, I just wrote that down. More homework
given to
added
Jay.
To my list.
All right, for those that stick around to the very, very bitter end, we want to reward you, of course. We got love. You know what that means, Jay? Hashtag Bengals Growler Bet. We need your Bengals Growler Bets in by the time the schedule gets released. Okay. I hope none of you have special access to somebody and are going to try to screw us on this. So you need to timestamp it to us, either at Paul Danner Jr., at Jay Morrison, ATH. Hashtag Bengals Growler Bet needs to be in there. Of course, or you can email me at pdaner@theathletic.com, pdaner@theathletic.com, your answer. And that is, guess the first two games. Can you guess the first two games that are on the Bengals schedule? Who will they be? In order. You know the opponents. That includes home or away. So you can't say Steelers, Browns. No, it needs to be at Raiders, home Browns, or whatever your combo is. Now, Jay gave you some big tips there. Jay told you, home, very likely. Away, very likely for week two. What is your guess for home for the first 2 weeks, what they will be?
Should we move up the deadline on this to like 5 o'clock tomorrow? Just because after that, they do start leaking out
leakage.
A little bit.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you're good call. Well, to avoid leakage, we will say, we'll say 5 o'clock, end of business. 5 o'clock p.m. on Wednesday. We need your answers in. Everything else disqualified. So that's we'll say first 2 weeks we need. Jay, do you have a guess?
Yeah, I'm going to go against everything I just told you guys. Because I think that Bengals, Jaguars just screams Thursday night, and it would fit the red schedule in week two. I think they go road home, and I'm going to say at the Jets and then home with the Jaguars.
At the Jets, home Jags on Thursday night, week two. You're putting them in the honey hole spot, in the Bengals honey hole spot against the Jags.
That's right. Yes. And 5 years ago, the Bengals were in New York for the 15-year anniversary of 9/11. This year, opening Sunday is September 12th. So they would again be in New York for the 20-year anniversary. And it just, Bengals Jets isn't super sexy. And I think they're going to put a lot of sexy games in week one. And that one's just going to be kind of lost in the shuffle. So it just feels like this would be ideal for the Bengals. You get two rookie quarterbacks right off the bat. But yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm going to go at Jets, home Jags.
All right. I'm going to say Niners. And then at Raiders. I'm going to open Niners at home, then at the Raiders for my first two starters. Send your guesses in by 5 o'clock on Wednesday to us on Twitter with a hashtag BengalsGrowlerBet, or you can email me BengalsGrowlerBet. You need growler to be in the subject header, because that's how I search it in my email to make sure I got them all. Growler and subject header with the first 2 weeks in there to pdaner@theathletic.com. And we will, if anybody gets it right, a delicious growler of 50 West beer of your choice can be yours. So send those in. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the very, very bitter end. We hope maybe you'll get rewarded. Maybe we'll get a winner. Or maybe we'll get a so close. So close.
I predict we will get a winner. Somebody's going to hit this.
I don't know. And there's a lot of options on the table. There's a lot of different options on the table. So we'll see what happens. All it takes is a weird, because everyone's going to go home road, I would think, because of the obvious red scenario. Want home start or something weird in there with a Monday or a Sunday or a Thursday, whatever. The whole thing blows up the works. You never know. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next Tuesday. Let's play more talk about as we blow through the offseason. OTAs right around the corner, rookie minicamp this weekend, and any news that pops off, we're always here for you. So thanks, everybody, for listening. We will talk to you next time.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.